It is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday morning here on Robinhood Radio. Of course, David has his own website, which is themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And occasionally we're going to turn him into a TV reviewer, and I think that we'll do that today because yesterday was the beginning of the televised January 6th hearings. So good morning, David.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be joining you again from the media capital of the world, New York City, my weekly session with that sharp-eyed observer, Marshall Miles. Yeah, and you're right. It's been one of those not uncommon occasions when Washington, D.C. can rightly vie for the title media capital of the world. Last night, Thursday, was definitely a major media event designed very largely with the media in mind, and certainly lapped up greedily by, well, almost all of the media. I'll deal with the almost part later on when we talk. But, of course, there was the January 6th committee's public hearings in the U.S. House of Representatives. Can I be a TV reviewer? Yes, I think I can. The hand of James Goldstein was very clear in this programming. That's what it was, programming. It was a constitutional event, of course. It was a formal meeting of the House of Representatives Select Committee on the January 6th events. But, of course, television was its vector, and James Goldstein's work was very evident, as I say. He was the former president of ABC News, who's been brought in to help present, better present, really, than it's normally been presented, the work of the committee, doing it, I think, in my opinion, very clearly and effectively. You could discern the strategy for getting through to an American public notorious for its short attention span. It was to treat the whole exercise not unlike a Netflix series, a mystery thriller or a police crime procedural, or perhaps the kind of Netflix investigative documentary that's highly influenced by police procedural series. And there are to be six episodes, of course, a pretty familiar Netflix format. Last night's opening episode classically set out the nature of the crime and also teased the kind of revelations we'll hear in fuller detail over the next five episodes.
Now,
it was a very tight cast, don't you think? It was just essentially four people on for the opening night. The avuncular but deadly serious chairman, Benny Thompson of Mississippi, handing over. Then quite early on to the Republic vice chair, Liz Cheney of Wyoming, who instantly became chief prosecutor. It's like she presented what seemed like a trial's opening statement on steroids. She laid out the case against Trump. They went straight for Trump, and almost immediately for Trump right at the beginning. It was striking, and the case presented was studied with supporting testimony quoted verbatim from its sources, usually the depositions given to the committee staff, sometimes on video that we hadn't seen before, or audio with accompanying photographs. I don't think it proceeded with the slickness of an investigative TV show, really. Thompson and Cheney are not practiced TV anchors, after all. But it was still very compellingly purposeful, not least among the very early on, among the damning citations, came Trump's own Attorney General, William Barr. It was a distinctly open, relaxed, down-to-earth, face-the-facts mode as he was being deposed. And he recalled telling Trump that Trump's fantasy of electoral fraud was just that, or to be more accurate as a reporter, I should say that Barr used a barnyard epithet for it, bleepable, but it went unbleeped. And then he returned to the subject later and used the tamer description of nonsense.
So now I remember the Watergate hearings, okay? Maybe it's because the way it was filmed, it's not in high definition. Maybe because it was a good old analog TV and there were more long-range shots.
It certainly was. Yeah.
And maybe because it was Sam Ervin who headed those hearings. But it seems to be a different view, this hearing. Right now, because of the country's split so much, even though back then during the Watergate hearings, there was great support. There was great support for Richard Nixon, just like there's great support right now for Donald Trump from the Trump supporters. But right now, off the beginning, I didn't get that.
We should remember. I think for the benefit of people whose memories don't go back that far. That Nixon was still bathing in an extraordinary landslide victory in the general election around about 2 years before this those hearings were held, and yes, there was a considerable bedrock of Nixon support that ought to be recognized as part of the context for those investigative hearings.
And now. Maybe it's because I was younger, and maybe it's because I was a huge disappointed Robert Kennedy fan when Robert Kennedy was assassinated, and maybe it was because I had a lottery number for the draft that came very close to being selected to go to Vietnam, but I know my anticipatory and my excitement and my interest in watching it and other friends were high. Do you get that feeling that will happen with this?
It's hard to know. There was certainly a lot of hype to build the whole event up, the series of events, because as I was saying, we can't just think about the one, although it was clearly vitally important to set the tone right away with the first one. There are five more to come. I think it will test the American attention span. But certainly the build-up was raised expectations mostly. I think there wasn't one of those games played where people said, "Oh well, don't expect too much." I think most of the people involved in the process were dropping hints that, well, one of the phrases used was that there will be bombshells. Well, I'm not sure if bombshells is exactly the right way to describe what we saw last night, though it was put together with great skill, and I was suggesting a very purposeful drive to it. As I said, it was a very small cast. It didn't range as widely, certainly, as some of the Watergate hearings, I remember. In this case, there were the two House of Representative members, the two Congress people. But the non-lawmakers who dominated the screen last night were only two of them. But they included, a woman who should now be classed as a new American hero for our times, Capitol Police Officer Caroline Edwards, who tried to hold the line against the attackers on the day and got injured in the process. Her testimony was compelling. And it was also the closely observant British documentary maker, Nick Quested, who's been around quite a long time, and his video footage shot that day made up much of the previously unseen video that was shown at length last night. I mean, he'd been following the so-called Proud Boys and gotten close to their leaders, even filmed one of the leaders in a surreptitious-looking meeting in a parking garage between the Proud Boys' top boy and the boss of the so-called Oath Keepers on the night before the attack. This was all, as I say, well-constructed, well packaged, if I can use that word, evidence to bring the story out as clearly as they possibly could, and I use the word story advisedly, because what were being delivered last night was a coherent narrative pointing in every instance back to Donald J. Trump himself. It was a very concentrated coup de CUDA TV, if I can put it that way. It was very firmly argued and very firmly supported by mostly video instances of compelling evidence. It's hard to remember what the Watergate hearings effect was on me. I actually worked on some of them from a distance. We did in British television. We couldn't carry the material live. What we did do in order to select it and do our form of packaging at the time, explaining it to a British audience or trying to explain it to a British audience, we would get the transcripts delivered every day, and we had American actors reenact the to and fro, the questioning and the witnesses' answers in tightly scripted pieces of drama. But realistic drama, of course, just not a word was changed in the text. And that was one way of doing it. I thought last night's way of doing it was a telling use of televisual skills in a public forum. Very, very different from the 1970s.
I think Liz Cheney, to me, revealed a mini bombshell announcement, and that's when she said she revealed that they were aware of the rioters. Chance to hang Mike Pence, the president responded with a sentiment, quote, maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence deserves it, end quote. That is a mini bombshell of an announcement.
Yes, and the Washington Post for sure goes big on that today. We know that he said very disparaging things about Pence. That particular quote, as far as I know anyway, all the material that I've looked at over the last 17 months, those particular words are new. The idea that he deserved being hanged is quite something. And one of the future episodes, if I can call it that, will be directly addressing the pressure that Trump tried to apply on state election authorities, particularly Georgia, of course, the infamous case there, but also the pressure that he applied on Pence, his own vice president. I think we can look forward, well, we can possibly look forward to even more revelations about that particular struggle.
Now, for people that aren't aware, there is no legal outcome that this committee, is this committee going to be to me like the Watergate committee that once again the Watergate committee I think stirred not a public reaction was always what it was, but stirred reaction in the Senate and in actual Republicans getting on board with of course the resignation of President Richard Nixon. Do you think that anything like that is possible nowadays in today's political climate?
Well, it's obviously hard to predict, but clearly that's the strategy. I mean, and appealing over the heads of lawmakers to the public at large is of course a tactic that is open to anyone who wants to achieve a political aim, and indicting the president, the former president, is of course one possible aim for, I know some of the members of the committee have that in mind. But it's essentially, I mean, of course, you just can't get away from it. That's a political process. I mean, although it will perhaps have a criminal law outcome, many people would devoutly wish that. But you know, on the way, you have to counter the political lie of the land. I mean, you won't be surprised to have seen and heard the counteroffensive launched in the media by the Trump supporters. I mean, yesterday, even ahead of the hearing, Republican House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy called a press news conference and tried to claim the committee was various things that the committee had done wrong, like altering. In other words, rewriting the verbal evidence previously given to the committee, and Representative Jim Banks of Indiana used the same news conference to advance a long debunked canard that the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was responsible for the delay in the National Guard coming in to help during the Capitol invasion. This same Congressman Banks was, of course, the man that one of the two men that Speaker Pelosi turned down for membership of the committee on grounds that his out-and-out support for Trump would prejudice the objectivity of the committee's work. I think I know what she meant in view of what he was saying yesterday. And, you know, the lie of the land is it has to be taken into account. I mean, in some ways, what I'm about to say is a mere footnote compared with the very considerable impact that last night's broadcast seemed to make. But perhaps the most inevitable American media point to make about the hearings coverage overall is that it was and it will be carried live and wall to wall, but not by Fox News, which continues to be a redoubt for all the discredited conspiracy theories about January 6th, from the election being stolen, that issue at the heart of the accusations made last night, Trump's barnyard epithet I can talk about, and right through to the accusations of that the whole invasion was a false flag operation by the extreme left of all people. Fox covered its its coverage was non-coverage, really. They said they were going to cover it in the normal way, according to Fox spokesperson. In other words, they let the scheduled megaphones for Trump, I mean their regular program hosts like Tucker Carlson, of course, let them treat the hearing process on the basis purely of its news value. Well, we know what Fox News' news values are. Carlson himself, you won't be surprised to know, made some special efforts. I mean, it was a Tucker Carlson special, trying to ridicule the committee's entire purpose, likening it to a totalitarian government. I didn't hear him utter the actual words "show trial," though the phrase appeared on as an on-screen headline, and then he was followed, of course, by. It was Sean Hannity who came next, and he described the whole thing as a multi-hour Democratic fundraiser. So you'll inevitably get the political conflict over whether anything will be done as a result of all these investigations. But I think clearly the strategy is to tilt the balance in terms of public opinion and, as a consequence, as all elected officials have to, they need to consider their own position as they take in the views of their own people. And we're dealing, of course, with something like, I mean, I don't know what the numbers were in the days of Watergate and Nixon, but we are dealing with 30% of the country who do believe Trump's lies about the 2020 election and are disposed to believe that he didn't have any influence over the attack on the Capitol, or at least want to whitewash it. That leaves two-thirds of people who are capable of being motivated or mobilized in some way to get the support in the Senate. That'll be the crucial place where this in the end plays out. But in the meantime, it's perfectly possible for this House committee, select committee, to at the end of the day make a recommendation, a referral to the Justice Department, and you might then see criminal charges against the main culprits.
I consider that probably maybe because I'm so leery as a very small percentage possibility. Do you agree?
Yes. It's unlikely, but it is clearly a driving ideal, if you like, behind this entire effort. At the very least. If we can talk in purely political terms, the committee's hopes, the majority of the committee's hopes anyway, would be that this will certainly influence one step along the way politically, which of course is the midterms in November. They argue, I think, in their minds, that we might persuade the public that indeed Donald Trump should be stopped now in his tracks and not become the Republican candidate for 2024. We will see. I think I rather agree with you. It's a small chance. I think it's a small chance of criminal action, but there's quite a much better chance of influencing the outcome of the midterms and limiting the traditional kind of damage that the incumbent Democrat majorities in both the House and the Senate are fearing might happen without this telling and compelling set of evidence that they're presenting to the public.
And one final comment and question that I'm going to talk to you about, and that is Liz Cheney. You mentioned her briefly, and we talked about her briefly. I am no fan of the political leanings of Liz Cheney. I disagree with most, if not all, but most of her views on politics and her take on this. But I have to say, Liz Cheney represents what we used to see in Washington, D.C., back in the era of Ronald Reagan, Tip O'Neill, Barry Goldwater, other Republicans and Democrats, and that is she's in a state where her approval rating, the 70% of the people have been stirred up to not like her by the president. Her political state be damned. She is doing what a United States representative should do, and she has to get kudos and credits for that. That yes, she's in politics. Yes, she's going to try to run again, but she was not going to back down from this. I think that is a big thing that I take from this whole affair.
Sure, Liz Cheney is probably, in political terms, toast. As a result of this. And it was in some ways a heroic effort. But the interesting was the way that she did it. She did have some words for her fellow Republicans. She's saying that Donald Trump will not always be here, but their dishonor in supporting him the way they have will live on. Politically, that's a difficult calculus to make, whether or not she's right. But it's a powerful notion, and she could be right. But the main point about her performance, I don't mean that in any kind of belittling way, but her presence, her forceful presence last night, was that she put on the hat of a prosecutor, and that was her laser-like focus that came over throughout. It was almost irrelevant what political party she was, although, of course, we have to see it in context, and we know what political tides are crisscrossing her future. But the main thing is that she did what you said a people's representative should do. She performed as a tribune of the people and represented the U.S. people in presenting a prosecution case against Donald J. Trump. Did it very effectively.
It's interesting to interesting to watch now. How do you think this plays abroad? One final thought. I mean, President Biden someone's going to get fired at the White House for setting up this conference with the South American. but we have that. We have the Ukraine, and now we have this. What does this do to the United States abroad?
Well, I did my usual cursory check of European and African. That's one of my particular areas of interest, and Asian media this morning before joining you. And for the rest of the world, on the whole, this is a slam dunk. there's no doubt in the majority of the commentariat. Mind, if I can use that phrase for other countries besides our own, that Trump lied, tried to launch a coup, and he failed. mercifully, in most people's view, most people's world view. And that, this was made very clear to the American public, and I think many Europeans and Asians and Africans too will be scratching their heads and saying, how can they possibly take him seriously for another run? But American politics is sui generis. It's very own kind, and it may not go the way that most people think.
Well, I just look at this and I say, Ron DeSantis is the point for me is that he is definitely challenging.
Governor.
Yeah, he is definitely challenging former President Donald Trump for leadership of the Republican Party and trying to grab the reins of what's going on. And I think that is a big indicator of what really is going on deep inside the Republican Party. Ron DeSantis is no big friend or supporter of Ronald Reagan at this particular point.
Well, I think there was plenty of ammunition for Ron DeSantis to use in his efforts to neutralize Donald Trump. Lots of ammunition in what we heard last night, and very likely much more to come in the next five sessions of that committee, which will be broadcast. At a different time of day, we have to get up early. You will already be up, of course, but we'll have to get up early to watch the succeeding episodes. It's going to be a bit of daytime broadcasting.
Well, I bet you we'll be talking about this next week, David.
I suspect we will.
All right. Have a good weekend, and thanks for joining us again today.
Goodbye.
David Terechuk with The Media Beat. Of course, once again, you can find David at his own website, themediabeat.us, themediabeat.us. And, of course, right here on our website, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on The Media Beat with David Terechuk.